Hello and welcome to Ask Margot. I'm Margot de Coatsworth. Something that's come up several times recently that I'd like to cover because it's an important part of the place I come from in my life and therefore what's reflected in the answers I give on this show, Ask Margot. I try to find a point of connection with every man, everybody, which is why I use the term the universe, because then nobody has to bring their unresolved debates about God into this arena. Because I often think if we get caught up with that, with the terminology, we miss the message. So if you say, oh, well, I don't know why God allows all those terrible things to happen, it's a shut off. It's like closing the door. And then you don't allow yourself to explore the possibilities or ideas or to receive a message that might benefit you because you've shut down. You've shut the door on it. If you think about it, we do that often. What I'd like to say, and I've had this conversation several times with people recently who've questioned me, or actually I've probably questioned them. These people who have a strong relationship with God, as I do, but they've explained what their expectations of life are, and they're not very great. They're not very expansive. And actually, sometimes they're just managing to be hopeful. They're not confident. I've said to these people who already have a solid relationship with God, do you not think that if you have that understanding and if you're in that place and you have that relationship with God and you know who you're designed to be, I love that phrase, who we are designed to be, then you have an advantage over somebody who hasn't got that understanding or relationship, who just sees themselves as the term I use sometimes is a mere earthling. We are not that. We just are not. We're not just 3D creatures living on a planet made of dust. What if we are so much more than that? What if we can be tapped into the source of everything? Plugged in, like putting a plug in the wall and turning the electricity on. What if we have that kind of access? That potential, access to that kind of power? Well, I believe we do. That's how I see myself, and that's how I see we are designed to be. So I don't want to hear from any God person who's telling me how small their life is, how limited their life is, and how they are just like everybody else who hasn't opened up their mind to something greater. I just want to make that clear because for me not to say that is not to present you with the whole story, the whole picture, which is that you are not designed for small. You are designed to be big. You are not limited. You are designed for the very opposite. Your resources, your understanding, your capability, none of those things are limited unless you accept them as such. So my last statement today would be, God designed you for more. Step into it. It actually brought a picture into my mind. Imagine God standing before you, handing you a gloriously wrapped gift, looking fabulous. It would actually contain everything you wanted from life. But you look at God and you say, oh, I couldn't possibly. I'm sure that can't be for me. I'm sure it's not my birthday. I really can't accept that. Well, that would be just too silly. See how silly we are sometimes? There's a line from a movie. I think it might be Mr. Creosote. He's about to explode from overeating, but we won't go there. He says, I'll take the lot. That's my philosophy. Let's take the lot, everybody. Okay, on a lighter note, I went to a Bridgerton ball recently with a full cone head pink wig full of feathers and flowers. It was enormous fun. So I'm going to slot a little Bridgerton Regency style into our episode today, just for fun. You'll know I'm doing it because I'll start with the expected intro. Greetings, dearest, gentle listener. One finds upon attending a most splendid ball, all silks, chandeliers, and the gentle sweep of orchestral waltzes, that society has always been governed by a certain set of unspoken rules. Who speaks, who listens, who shows consideration, and who, quite unmistakably, does not. Though the costumes may belong to another era, the behaviours are remarkably unchanged. Courtship, conversation, money, manners, and perhaps a hint of scandal. They are simply modern questions dressed in very fine historical clothing. And so, in that spirit, let us turn to a few such matters and see what guidance may best serve us now. So the question, a lady or gentleman who peppers every sentence with unnecessary ornament soon finds their meaning quite lost in the fray. Speak plainly, speak with intention, for clarity, much like good breeding, is always noticed. Right, back to me. Margot, what about the way many young people speak today, constantly saying like or be like? It can sound vague and certainly unprofessional in business, and also irritating. How can that be changed? It is a very noticeable habit, and you're right, it can dilute what someone is trying to say. When every sentence is filled with like, the message loses precision. It becomes softer, less certain, and sometimes difficult to follow. And in a professional or high-trust environment, clarity matters. Most people who speak this way are not doing it deliberately. It's a habit. It's come from environment, peers, media, and it's become automatic in many cases. It's also a way of buying time while thinking, a verbal pause that has simply taken the place of silence. So the solution is not criticism. The solution is awareness and replacement, because habits don't disappear just because you decide to stop. They need to be replaced very often. The first step is to notice it. If someone becomes aware that they are saying like repeatedly, that alone can begin to change the pattern. You might even suggest they record themselves speaking for a minute or two. It can be quite revealing. The second step is to introduce silence. Instead of filling every gap with like, allow a pause. A short pause is not a problem. In fact, it often signals confidence. It gives weight to what you are saying. People who are comfortable with silence tend to be perceived as more composed and more credible. So instead of saying, I was like going to the meeting and he was like, you allow, I was going to the meeting and he said. Simple, clean, direct. Now, if a word is needed, there are better choices. Instead of like, you might use such as. For example, specifically, in fact, what happened was. These words carry meaning. They guide the listener. They strengthen the sentence rather than weaken it. And then there is a deeper point. Language reflects identity. When someone speaks with clarity, they're perceived as someone who thinks clearly. When someone speaks in a scattered or uncertain way, that impression carries across, whether it's fair or not. So this is not about sounding perfect. It's about being taken seriously. How do you deal with it now, either in yourself or in someone else? If it's in you, practice speaking more slowly. Give thoughts time to form. Replace the filler with a pause or a precise word. If it's someone else, especially a young person, be careful not to criticize because they don't like that. Instead, you might model clear speech yourself or gently point it out in a constructive way. Try saying that again without the likes. Often that's enough, because once someone hears the difference, they begin to prefer it. And this is the key. Clear language feels better to use. It gives you authority. It gives you presence. It allows your ideas to land properly. So it's not about removing personality or informality. It's about strengthening communication. Say what you mean. Pause when needed. Choose words that carry meaning. And let your language reflect the level of clarity you actually have. Or you could always try a like jar, working on the same principle as a swear jar. Okay, our next question. Dearest gentle listener, there are those who enter a room already apologising for their presence. How unnecessary. A gracious acknowledgement will always carry more elegance than a needless apology offered too soon. And the question was, Margot, many people begin sentences or meetings with an apology. I'm sorry I'm late. I'm sorry I didn't get back to you. I'm sorry I dropped the ball. Is this a problem? And if so, how do we handle it better? People want to be polite and they want to acknowledge that something hasn't gone perfectly. They want to show respect. But when you begin with an apology, you begin from a diminished position. You are, in effect, placing yourself slightly below the moment before anything else has even been said. I'm sorry I'm late. I'm sorry I didn't respond sooner. I'm sorry I haven't done that thing yet. Of course, there are times when a clear apology is appropriate. If you've genuinely caused harm or significant inconvenience, then a direct apology is the right thing to do. But in many everyday situations, what we're really trying to do is acknowledge, not apologise. There's a better way to do it. You can shift from apology to appreciation. Instead of, I'm sorry I'm late, you say, thank you for waiting for me. Instead of, I'm sorry I haven't got back to you sooner, you say, thank you for your patience. And instead of, I'm sorry I dropped the ball, you say, thank you for your understanding. Here's where we are now. Or sometimes I say, it will never happen again. Now notice what happens. You're recognizing the situation, you're not ignoring it, but you're not placing yourself on the back foot. And you're acknowledging the other person's good qualities. They love that. Language shapes how others perceive you, but it also shapes how you perceive yourself. If you're constantly leading with apology, you begin to reinforce an internal sense of being slightly at fault, slightly behind, slightly not quite enough. Whereas when you lead with appreciation, you reinforce composure. You acknowledge reality, but you do so from a position of capability. Now, this is not about avoiding responsibility. If something genuinely requires an apology, give it cleanly and directly. I apologise for the delay. Here's what I've done to correct it. Then move forward. But for the many small moments where people habitually say, sorry, you can make a simple shift. Challenge yourself. Never begin an introduction again or an interaction with, I'm sorry. Begin it with, thank you. For your patience, for your understanding. This will all wear thin, of course, if you're always late, behind, slack, or always sorry. Stop that immediately. Change your behaviour so you don't need to apologise all the time. You do not need to enter an interaction from a position of fault. You can enter it from a position of presence, clear, composed, responsible, and ready to proceed. Our next question. Dearest gentle listener, a gentleman who speaks only of himself has already told you everything you need to know. One need not linger for a second engagement, for a conversation like a dance ought to be shared. And the question was, Margot, what should you be looking for when you first start dating someone? Are there early signs that tell you not to continue? Oh, yes, there are. One important one is when you're getting to know someone, you're not looking for perfection, you're looking for interest. Are they interested in you? Do they ask you questions? Do they listen to your answers? Do they respond to what you've said or simply wait for their turn to speak again? Because one of the clearest early signs is if someone only talks about themselves and shows little or no curiosity about you, that is not a small thing. It's important information. People often put their best foot forward at a first meeting, and they're usually more attentive, more considered, more engaged than they would be later, possibly. So if even at that stage when they are trying, they're not interested in you, you have to take that seriously. It's very unlikely to improve. In fact, it's more likely to become more pronounced over time. A self-centered person at the beginning is not going to become suddenly attentive later. If anything, once they're comfortable, the imbalance tends to increase. So the question becomes very straightforward. Why would you go on a second date with someone who's shown you they're not interested in you? There is no reason to. People often override this, especially if that person has a pretty face. They think, maybe they were nervous, maybe they'll be different next time. Perhaps I didn't give them enough of a chance. Maybe you were the one not showing interest. And of course, one can always allow for a little grace. But there is a difference between someone being slightly nervous and someone being consistently self-focused. You can feel the difference. One person may talk a little too much, but still attempts to engage with you. And another person does not turn towards you at all. And that matters because dating is not about proving your worth to someone. It's about observing whether there is mutual interest. You're not there to impress them into liking you. You are there to see whether they already do. So if you find yourself leaving a conversation feeling unseen, unheard, or unconsidered, pay attention. That's not something to analyze away. It's something to acknowledge and then very simply say, next, please. Because the right person will not require you to wonder whether they're interested. They'll show you, and they are worth a second date. Our next question. Dearest gentle listener, it would seem that many traverse the course of their lives as though at the mercy of circumstance, rather than by the hand of their own design. Yet, the moment one dares to assume authorship, those very circumstances relinquish their command and most obligingly begin to follow. This next question seems very similar to last week's, and I considered not including it because we kind of covered it. But then I thought, who am I to decide such things? There may be somebody listening today who really needs to hear this message again. So if that's you, listen and act upon it. There seems to be a pattern in many of the questions you receive, Margot, whether it's about relationships, money, confidence, or the past. People often feel at the mercy of what's happening. Is there a way to step out of that and feel more in control? Yes, there absolutely is, and it begins with a very simple but powerful idea. Ask yourself this question: who is meant to be the author of my life? Many people are living as though they are participants in their life, rather than the ones writing their story. There are things in life that we do not choose. Events occur. People behave in ways we would not wish. Situations arise that are outside of our control. But what often happens is this. We take what happened and then we continue it forward. We carry it and we build our identity around it. We say, this is how it is for me. And in doing so, we unknowingly give away authorship. Let's look at that and what it means in practice. When someone says, I can't, it sounds like a statement of fact. I can't leave, I can't change this, I can't move forward. But often it's not a statement of fact, it's a statement of identity. It means I don't see myself as someone who does that. And the moment you shift that even slightly, everything begins to move. But if I could, what would I do? That came up in a question last episode. Now you're no longer locked inside the limitation. You're stepping just outside of it. That's authorship beginning to return. Or take the example of the past. Someone has had difficult experiences, real ones, and they can see the effect of those experiences in their life now. And it feels as though that past is still determining their present. But when you see it as something you're wearing, like that heavy old coat that you can take off, you begin to understand. You can take that thing off, not because it didn't happen, but because you're no longer required to carry it. That is authorship. Or when someone misunderstands you, they say you were rude or you were unkind, and you know that was not your intention. Now you have a choice. You can take that on, adjust yourself, reshape yourself to fit their perception, or you can recognize that's their interpretation. That's not mine. Again, there's the authorship. Or, like today, we've talked about when we begin everything with an apology. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. We are placing ourselves in a position of fault before anything has even begun. And yet, with a simple shift, thank you for waiting, thank you for your patience, we move from apology to presence. Isn't it interesting how all of these questions tie into that concept today? Authorship. Even in something as simple as dating. If someone shows you they're not interested, they do not ask about you, they do not engage, and yet you continue hoping it might change, you are no longer observing, you are persuading. You're trying to write yourself into a story where you are not being chosen. Where authorship says, this is what I'm seeing, but this is what I'm choosing. And it's different. And you move on. It's about recognizing where you have influence and using it. Your influence is your words, your responses, your decisions, your interpretations. These are all totally within your control and authorship. They shape far more than most people realize. There's also something happening at a deeper level. Your mind and your body respond to the story you are living in, the one you tell. If the story is, this is happening to me, the body will organize around that. It prepares, it protects, it contracts. If the story becomes, I'm deciding how I move through this, your system changes. There's more space, more clarity, more direction. So authorship is not just philosophical, it's practical. It's lived moment by moment, and it does not require grand changes always. It requires consistent choices. To question the I can't, to take off what no longer fits, to not accept what is not yours, to choose what aligns. Over time, these choices accumulate, and what begins to happen is that life feels different. Not because everything has changed externally, but because you're no longer inside it in the same way. You are no longer at the mercy of every situation. You're participating in it consciously. And this is where people say, oh, I feel more like myself. I feel clearer. I feel more in control. And what they're really describing is that they have returned to authoring their own story. So if you're listening and you feel that life is happening around you and to you, ask yourself a simple question. Have I handed over authorship? And am I willing to take it back? because you may not control everything that happens, but you do have a say in how your life is written from now on. And that's where your power lies. Practically, what should you do next? Change how you talk to yourself and about yourself. Elevate that, and the rest will follow. Well, that's our last question today. Don't forget that if you want to listen to previous episodes, they are available on Apple and Spotify podcasts as well. Send your questions into us at admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me under the contact tab at margotunlimited.com, Margot with a T. And I have waited a long time to make this little announcement. I can now let you know that The Word at Margot Unlimited is available as an app. After so much to-ing and fro-ing with Apple, we are there. Ta-da! You do have 3 free days with 3 questions each day that you can ask. So please do have a look at The Word at Margot Unlimited in the App Store. It's only for Apple users at the moment, but we will be moving forward from there. I have been taking my own advice recently and using a flood of thank yous that we talked about on a previous episode, full immersion in gratitude as a part of my life. So I wake up in the morning and I start saying thank you for everything I can think of. It sets your state for the day. And any time you feel wobbly or cross or that your life is not going according to plan, then play the thank you game and go for it. I think it's a key. It takes quite a bit of focus, not just to do it intermittently or for a short time, but to do it relentlessly, unquestionably, and constantly. If you're feeling less than in any way, if your mood or your circumstances or any issues you're dealing with have got a hold on you, you can get on top of them by using this thank you game where you fill your whole awareness up with thank yous for every single thing you can think of. And don't stop till you're right out of breath or till you feel good, whichever comes first. It really does work, and I'm enjoying doing that. And this last message from the universe is regarding this. Here's what the universe said to me on this matter. This is The Word, our message from the universe today. You are changing the feeling around your life because of your gratitude. You are seeing that you have more and not less, that you have much and not little. We have made shifts that you actually see now. This is all good. Keep on that path and you will see where it leads you. And always remember, I am a God of more, not of less. Thank you. See you next time.
This program was produced at Coast Access Radio with the support of New Zealand On Air.